This is episode 8 of the Transformation Chamber with recently retired 10-year NFL vet Earl Mitchell. In this episode, we discuss the importance of remaining teachable, why you should speak up for your dreams, and the power of gratitude. With that being said, let's step into the Transformation Chamber. All right, welcome back to episode 8 of the Transformation Chamber. I'm very excited about this episode. I have one of my old friends, old and dear friends, Earl Mitchell with me, man. Earl, what's up, brother?
Thank you, man. I'm glad to be on your show, man.
Yeah, man. Earl is a recently retired, just this year, 10-year NFL veteran, man. Like, man, Earl, we met in middle school.
Yeah. Eighth grade.
Eighth grade, man. Yeah. And here we are, 2020. I don't even know what year that was. Just we know it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But so before we even get into it, one thing I always like to do is just get to know the guests. You know what I mean? Tell us about, you know, your upbringing, where you came from. I know you're from the city of Houston, but what was life like for Earl Mitchell growing up and some of the things that helped mold you into the man that you've become today?
Well, you know, I grew up on the northeast side of Houston, like Tidwell Homestead area. It was an interesting time. I grew up mainly around with my grandma, with my mom, my sister, my aunts, cousins, and, you know, just a big household, you know, filled with women. And it was interesting, man.
Right.
And I really enjoyed it. You know, it was just surrounded around a lot of love. And ultimately, like, it was just a really a great household to grow up in.
Sweet. So how do you think that impacted you just growing up with a household of women? And I happen to know a little bit more than the average person just because, like I said, we went to middle school together. You were surrounded by all women.
Right.
And here you are, this, you know, very masculine, big black man and who happened to grow up and become such a success. How do you think that played into your success and just your trajectory?
Yeah, just a different mindset. You know, I was able to, like, really just sit under the table and just hear all these women just speak about, like, what life is like for them. And so I felt like I got a different perspective as far as, like, just how I should grow up as a man.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, like, to it's one thing to, like, really, like, get that that feel for what a man should be from the perspective of what of different women think. So yeah, it was definitely some growing pains.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. So we went to Kirby Middle School together on the north side. Then you went to North Shore, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a highly acclaimed school for football players.
Right. But no, the interesting about that is, like, when I went to North Shore, I had no idea that I was going to such a powerhouse of one of those, like, Texas, big Texas high school football teams.
Right, right.
And so when I came there, I was just, you know, just going there with just a mindset. I'm just transferred to a new school again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to be approached by a basketball coach. And he asked me if I wanted to play basketball. And I hated basketball when I was growing up. I was terrible at it. And he was like, man, you're a big kid, man. You got to do something. He's like, what do you think about football? And I was just like, why not? Like, what I got to lose?
Wow.
So I came to the school late and then just decided to just join the football team. And, you know, the rest is history. Everything just really just worked out for me.
That's a blessing, man. When a coach or a teacher can see something in you before you even see it in yourself or even know to be even thinking that way.
Right.
And then look how it turns out.
Right.
And you touched on something. You said, you know, you thought it was just you transferring to another school. You transferred schools a lot throughout your youth. Did that have any effect on you? And, like, what was that landscape like for you?
You know, like, now I believe they call it socially awkward, but, I transferred so many schools where it's like, I was always constantly the new kid and I found myself, like, hard to make friends or, just very quiet and shy and, you know, just, transferring to so many different schools out here in Houston. Whether it's elementary school, transferred to 3 different middle schools, went to North Shore and really just kind of found my 4-year home there, which was nice and different. But I was lucky enough, you know, stay there and find football.
Beautiful, man. Mm-hmm. And so from North Shore, you went on to Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
What was that transition like going to college, being able to continue your football journey? And then also, is there Arizona, what's the demographic? Is it predominantly white school?
Or yeah, predominantly white. It's like 3% black and most of them were athletes. So so we all knew each other.
Yeah. So help paint the picture for us of what's going on in your mind during this time.
I was excited to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking that you know, when I was in high school, I got the opportunity to see so many guys get college scholarships, and that's really what motivated me. I was like, you know, why can't I get a scholarship?
Absolutely.
But I want to see myself like get, you know, go to college and graduate too. And so when I got the offer to go to Arizona, it was just you know, it was a great opportunity for me. I go there and I really thought that I could just like really start out good, and I didn't realize I had such a transition academically. But I definitely got over that, and it just turned out to be a really good you know, overall college experience for me.
That's beautiful. How long did you go 4 years at Arizona?
Yeah, I went 4 years.
Sweet. And mm-hmm. then the beautiful, glorious day, which we all were happy and proud of.
Mm-hmm.
You were drafted in 2010.
Yeah.
Third round. Man, I remember celebrating like my brother got drafted. So right, you would have thought we all made it, you know what I mean? So, you know, give us a little bit about what's going on around you, your family. Like, yeah, I know your family were proud. Like you said, you were raised by all women.
Yeah.
And they raised you to be able to play one of the toughest sports there is to play.
Yeah.
What was going on around that time, around that era?
You know, it was a scary time. You know, I knew that there was a possibility that I could go to the NFL, but I was still unsure.
Mm-hmm.
I was still fairly new to the game. There was still a lot that I hadn't quite learned yet. And so, like, I really wasn't necessarily sure. So to get that opportunity, play in the NFL, initially, it was a very scary time.
Right.
Because not only did I think that I didn't know if I had a long shot to one, make the team, I didn't know if I was going to get drafted.
Right.
And I just didn't know, like, I didn't know how long it was going to last. And then on the other side, once I did make it, now I'm afraid of what new trials and tribulations
right.
that's going to bring now.
What comes with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you had, you know, again, when we talked about it, 10-year vet, that's like, you know, 10 years is like doing 40 years in corporate America, you know what I mean, in the NFL.
Right.
I Googled it right before we talked today, and like the average football career now is at 3.3 years or something.
Yeah.
And so for you to be able to do 10 years, I mean, 10 years says a lot, you know what I mean?
Right.
And again, congratulations to you. And so walk us through what it's like to come home, bro. Like, no, not very many people get drafted at their home team. Like,
right.
What, you know, just what were you, well, you know what I mean? Like, that just seems amazing to me.
No, it was funny because, like, I'm sitting there thinking that during the draft, I was like, I can go to Pittsburgh, I can go to Chicago.
Right.
I have no idea where I'm going to go. And then when I saw that 713 number pop up on draft day, like, it was like, this is crazy.
That's lit, man.
Yeah, I had like a Nokia brick at the time, too.
Yeah.
So, like, the call had dropped, and I remember sprinting down the street. I called the GM back. I was like, man, like, this is cool. And so, yeah, I remember having to go back to Arizona, pack my things, and like just flying back, you know, to the city. And I'm on a bus with all the new rookie draft picks. None of these guys have ever seen Houston.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I'm just seeing everything that's just like, wow.
Like home.
Yeah, this is home. And I really just kind of had a moment to reflect.
Absolutely.
Like that it's all full circle.
Do you remember, just for me, I'm just curious, do you remember what was going on that flight? Leaving Arizona, coming back home, knowing now that you have been drafted and you're getting ready to play for the home team. Do you remember what was going on?
Just being shook. Just having a lot of anxiety, just knowing that like my life is completely going to be completely different as soon as these wheels land.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember because once college was done, it was the first time in my life where I didn't really think about what I was going to do next.
Uh-huh.
I was literally in no man's land and I had no idea what I was going to do next, where I was going to be, and if I played football, how long is that really going to last?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to, you know, we had rookie symposiums when I was younger, and we had Deion Sanders speak to us, and he always told us to begin with the end in mind. And that was something that was like really just something. It was the first thing I wrote down. I have my notebook from 10 years ago, and that was the first thing I wrote down. And that was something that I really just tried to just hone in on. And I really tried to put a lot of my focus on the what could happen on the back end.
On the back end of it. That's beautiful. And I'll touch on that again. Begin with the end in mind. And a lot of times it's like thinking about what your legacy is going to be when you leave here, or what does the picture look like? If I'm 20 now, at 40, at 50, what does my life look like?
Right.
And then you kind of reverse engineer and say, okay, that means I need to do this. I need to get disciplined right now. I need to build new habits and then, you know, building a career. So no, that's beautiful. Okay. So now you're drafted. Game one. I got to know, like, game one, what happened? Did you throw up? Did you, you know, what was the, what was the feeling?
Nerves, man. I had all types of nerves. I'm going against Peyton Manning, the Colts, man.
Oh, that's my boy.
Yeah. So these are it all hits you. Like, I can't believe that I'm really out here. And literally you have a moment. I remember getting in my stance like, that's Peyton Manning. What are you about to do?
I'm supposed to sack Peyton Manning right now.
Right. So it's just like, I I'm watching you on TV. Same thing like with, I had so many like wow moments, you know, whether it was Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick. Like, I was like, I can't believe I'm really out here with y'all.
That's
crazy, bro. So it was, I had so many out of body experiences when it came to just being in the league and just being grateful.
Right.
And because I had no idea that it was supposed to happen.
So that's so beautiful, because we spoke right before we went live, and you talked about how every time you put on your uniform for the entire 10-year career, it was like an out of body experience.
Yeah.
And that level of, here's a question for you. How do you think that level of gratitude played a part in you being so successful?
I think it was a big part of it, you know, because if you think about it, I played 9 years, and then I decided to retire. Then I was done.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, you know, unfortunately, the last four games of my career in San Francisco, I was basically asked to not play. Mm-hmm. And it was very it was a moment to reflect like, wow, it's really
done.
It's going away. Yeah. And so like I had a moment where like a lot of my teammates were just they didn't understand why I was so calm about it. And because I just know how they would respond, and they would be upset. And I just told myself, like, you know what? I'm grateful. Like whatever happens, like I made it to the NFL. It's not that I couldn't care less about what happened, but it's like, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here. And if I go away tomorrow, like, yeah, I did it. Like,
I mean, if you think about it, and not to cut you off, you think about it, so many young kids dream to play at that level, right? Whether it's basketball, football, baseball, whatever. And you happen to be one of the select few. And I'll turn that into a question. Just looking back over your lifespan, do you think it's something specifically about you or a certain people who make it to the NFL? Or if you could give advice to someone trying to go that route, what would it sound like?
I think it's listening, be willing to be coachable. I think a lot of people get being told what to do, or feeling insecure about someone pushing you.
Right.
Like, there's like some people can't relate the two of like, you know, like you being like you in my face right now.
Right.
And to me, like, I was very coachable. And if somebody like gave me some advice or told me something, because like, you have to remember, I was very new to the game. I was very coachable. And so I listened a lot. And anything that anybody, any advice that anybody was willing to give me, I was always willing to take. That's what I think a lot of people, that's what separated a lot of people who thought that they already knew what they were supposed to be doing. And they really wasn't willing to listen to heed advice and apply it.
I think that transfer over to just life in general. We have to be students forever.
Right.
And you can learn something from me at the age of 32. I can learn something from a 20-year-old, a 15-year-old, or a 40, 50-year-old. And just being able to be teachable. I heard someone explain it this way. It's the teachability index. How teachable are you throughout your lifetime? And a lot of times that shows up in how successful you are.
Right.
And so that goes back to how you were able to start in just high school, because a lot of these cats started in Little League, mm-hmm. right? You played football. You started in the ninth grade,
right.
which is a beautiful story. Okay, so you were talking, you were at Houston for 7 years.
Four years. Houston for four years. Then I went to Miami for three. And then I went to San Fran for two.
Okay, I'm gonna jump back to Houston, though, because I got to know what it's like to play with Andre Johnson, the great, right?
Right.
And then some of these other... these phenomenal players. You crossed paths with JJ, yeah. right? And then, you know, what was that like, locker room like for you to be a part of that?
You know, my first experience in the league, like, really taught me a lot. Like, being able to play with those guys, these were good men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and different teams are like, they want to gel their guys differently in certain ways. And the Texans, they went after guys who were captains in college. They would love guys who have graduated college. That did work in the community, like, and you can feel it. Like,
right.
that was something we got a bad rap on sometimes. It's like, well, we ain't got enough dogs on this team.
Right,
like, we ain't
right.
got enough, like just
that's interesting.
Mean people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but the Texans was very big on just having the right type of people. And I felt like I really fit in that locker room.
Absolutely. What was the transition from Houston to Miami? Well,
it was different. Cause literally, like, I was very young coming to an older Texan team. Guys like Andre, guys like Wade Smith. These are guys, Chris Myers, or you know, and the team was just a much older team.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot from them as far as it was just weird. Like, you know, we play on Sunday, and then coming from college, like, you go out after the games.
Right, right.
But then when I got to the league, like, they go home.
They
got family. Yeah, they got family. They got their kids. And then, like, we just beat the Colts.
Right, right.
Like, and we blew them
we
up.
We supposed to turn up.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, everybody went home. Everybody got their bags. And they took their pictures with their family.
Welcome to the league.
I went to Miami. It was a different game.
Team,
I went to Miami. And now I'm an older guy,
uh-huh.
and I never been the older guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember when I was in the locker room when I first got there, and I was always like the first one in the locker room because that's how we did
right.
here in Houston. And team was just a little bit more laid back.
Right.
And I remember like being in the locker room, somebody was like, "Hey, OG," and I was like, "They ain't talking to me." I turned around and they was like, "Hey, what time we got meetings?" I was like, "Oh, you talking to me?"
I'm OG now,
you know. So, and that was year five.
Wow.
And that
that's a testament to some careers, just 3 years and you a vet, man.
Yeah. Everybody on that Miami team was like maybe like 4 years and younger.
Mm.
And I was used to being around guys that was 8 years and older.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it was a different experience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a great time. It was a good time for me to really like enhance my leadership skills.
Nice.
I didn't realize that like I was really thrown into a mix of younger men who was like still trying to find their way.
Right.
And like when I got to Miami, like guys are like asking me all these questions, and I felt like I was literally like I'm in your shoes too.
Right. Right.
But,
right.
But then once I realized like, hey, I'm a leader now. I got to be somebody that I guess I'm not. And that was something that I had to learn. When I say be somebody that I'm not, I mean, like I have to be somebody that I haven't been.
Right.
But in a positive sense.
Sounds like you had to get uncomfortable, right? For the better good or the greater good of not only your career, but these people who are looking up to you.
Right.
Which is usually the case. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Like anytime you want to, I talk about this all the time. Anytime you want to do something, reach some new point, reach some new goal, chances are you're going to have to get uncomfortable at some point. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? So from Miami, all the lessons you took from Houston to Miami, you then go to San Fran.
Right.
What's you know, where you are at that point?
It was a similar experience to Miami, but this now I'm more in tune with my vet.
Uh-huh.
Like I am a vet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
When I first got to Miami, I couldn't believe I was a vet. And when I got to San Francisco, it's like, because the thing was like, I was pretty much done with football. Like uh-huh. I felt like I was done with football by the time I left Miami. But I got a phone call from a lot of the coaches in San Francisco. They were a lot of that staff from Houston transferred to San Francisco.
Okay.
And so when I had got released from Miami, they were the first team to call me and just like, hey, we need your veteran presence in the room. And I understood it their team was way younger than the team in Miami.
Yeah.
And so I went there. I embraced the role and I had fun with it this time.
That's beautiful. So now you like, hey, young blood.
Now, yeah. Now I'm comfortable being the vet, you know?
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And so throughout your time in San Fran, how many years did you do
there? I was there for 2 years.
Right.
And then I retired.
Right. Just, I want to make sure it's clear.
Yeah.
And then just a miracle happened. That's how I look at it. But I'll let you explain it.
Well, yeah. Like, so I was there in San Francisco and we did not have good years there. It was a new regime. Everybody from top to bottom was very new at their job. We have John Lynch, who was a former player. He's a general manager. You got Kyle Shanahan. He's his first time head coach. You have a brand new defensive coordinator. It's his first time being a defensive coordinator. My D-line coach. First time ever, like, being a D-line coach. So we literally are, like, starting from the bottom with new guys, like, really just in the learning stages of their own. And I think everybody had a chip on their shoulder, including me. Like, I was, you know, I felt like I had something to prove. I'm older, but I can still play. All that good stuff. So I ended up playing there for 2 years and didn't go so well. And then I ended up retiring. I announced retirement.
Right. I remember because I'll let you finish. You posted it, I think, on social media.
Yeah.
It was such a beautiful post. And I probably commented. It was like, hey, bro, man, I'm proud of you. Sure. It's all good. Like, you did it. You know what I mean? And I just thought it was such a celebratory post.
Right.
It wasn't like, oh, man, he's retiring. It was like,
yeah,
homie just played like 9-10 years straight. You know what I mean? In the Professional Football League.
Yeah.
And so hats out to you. But and then you got another call, or what was the next thing?
Yeah, I got the phone call from John Lynch. Like, after the entire season went, I didn't play the 2019 season.
Right.
This is my first time I've ever been without football, and that was a challenge itself. But when I went through that, and this is my first time without the game, and they went to the playoffs, and they gave me a phone call and asked me to join them for the playoffs. So I unretired.
Right. That was another post that I remember seeing.
Right.
I was like, whoa, like, what's happening? But you know what? I'm curious of the time, that year without football.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that? You know, just, this is your first time not playing football in probably over half a decade and just a half, or something like that.
Since I was 15.
15.
Yeah. So
what were the feelings, thoughts, and emotions that you were seeing?
It was hard. It was hard being with something that you've grown to love, something that you finally found, something that you could be passionate about, and I've been developing my talent here. This is really what I've been putting all my focus and energy into, and now it's going away. Like, now you got to think, what are you going to do next? And it was a difficult process, but I essentially like started to get over it, but I also started to honestly feel for a lot of former players.
And now I
understand.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, they always go straight to like, oh yeah, you know, CTE, like he got issues, or like he's going, like, but no, nah, like, these guys have been doing stuff like you said, since they were like since they were 6 years old,
literally,
8 years
yeah.
old. I started when I was 15, and I honestly did not have like that strong passion that a lot of those guys had. But for them, for the game to be taken away, is always going to be hard.
Yeah.
And people don't realize like how much the game means to a lot of you. It's a lot of them. It's not just a game.
Right.
So it's the way we make a living.
For you, it came kind of by like somebody saw something in you, and then you saw that, hey, I might can get my school paid for.
Right.
And then saying, oh, well, I might can go to the next level, but some of these people been dreaming since, you know, the first time they put on cleats and pads. And so now I've heard stories about athletes in all sports, boxers, basketball players, once they retire, especially when it's not a, I'm choosing to retire. It's like you're being retired or forced to retire. They go into this state of depression and lost, don't know what's next. Like, you know, and I know I have a friend, she was on the show, Dr. Sean. She is doing some work right now to kind of help athletes transition. Like, what's that transition period from professional to what's next? Or here are some things we could do. And you talked to, I think you told me about some of the work that you did.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you were in Miami, you got to kind of go see some different career opportunities.
Yeah. So around year six is when I just kind of start hitting like, man, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be playing. And because, you know, the average is 3 years. Mm-hmm. So We were lucky enough to be able to shadow a few of Stephen Ross's businesses.
And Ross is the owner.
Yeah, he's the owner of the Dolphins, mm-hmm. and he's a big real estate mogul out there in Miami, and so he has different business ventures, different like social media platforms that he was like working on to create, and he's also the co-owner of Equinox Gym. So we got to really shadow a bunch of those companies, okay, and really get a good learning experience as far as how can we really advance our endeavors outside the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's super cool that they did that, and you notice now a lot of athletes are thinking begin with the end in mind, like you said. Especially I don't see it as much in the NFL, but in the NBA I see it a lot. Like people are investing and already coming up with plans and production shows. Like Steph Curry has his production company, and obviously KD's invested in one of those ride share companies. Like it's escaping me right now. So I think it's important, you know, you like you said, you guys are so committed and devoted to this art form, to this sport, that when do you really have time to think about what am I going to be doing after this? And then all of a sudden there's this drop off, and it's like, this is your first time, and we talked about this a little bit. It's your first time in the, not that the NFL is not the real world, but that's one real world. This is your first time in just the real world, and you expect it to just function.
Right.
Are you a businessman, or do you like the health and wellness? Like, what is it? You have to figure it out.
Yeah, it's an interesting time because I felt a lot behind the curve. Like I never put in a resume, and I didn't realize that.
That's
like
crazy.
You know, and I'm 6 years in the league. You know, a lot of guys, you know. Yeah, y'all been to college. People have like done all these things, and then I remember like hanging out with my friends, and they're just talking about all the establishments or you know programs that they're involved with, and just the steps that they've taken. And I was like, and I'm you know I've been playing. Everybody knows I've been playing football for 6 years,
right.
It's like it's hard for me to really get involved in the conversation,
right?
But yeah, like I've never did a resume. I've never you know sat down and had a job interview outside of talking to coaches,
right?
But it was, I always knew that I was going to be behind the curve, and I had to like figure out a way to really catch up.
So and we're going to get back to the San Fran story. I wanted to save that for the end, but you during this time with Steve Rogers, Stephen Rogers or Steve Rogers?
Stephen
Rogers. You got exposed to WWE,
right?
Correct. Tell me about that and kind of where is your thinking going on that?
Yeah. So initially, like that was wrestling has always been my passion since I was a kid, and I remember we went to one of his business ventures, which was it was a sports and entertainment firm, and what they do is they handle like soccer contracts for television. And when we went there, they really didn't know what to do with us. We all sat at the table and they gave us just a rundown of what they do. But they was like interested in what we were interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody, they went around the table and they asked all the guys and, you know, a lot of guys gave their answers. You know, they wanted to like, you know, help people in the community. When they got to me, I told them, I was like, I like wrestling. I was like, if there's any way that I can get involved with behind the scenes. That was something that I've always been interested in, and something that I wanted to do.
That's dope.
And they was like, I think we have a connection.
Wow.
And that was one thing that I learned on that trip is just like you don't know who knows who.
Yeah, I think the reality of it is sometimes, a lot of times, it takes hard work to get what you want, but you never know when. Sometimes it's just you speaking up or asking about it.
Right.
I mean, I've had those times where you know I'm busting my head open, working, and then you just ask the right question, and then the doors come, you know, fly open for you. So, what came of you know you being able to articulate that you're interested in WWE, and then they had the connection? What did that lead to?
Well, one, just me, first off, just like kind of losing that fear of like just being laughed at, you know, because like this was like at a point in my career where I was like, I'm going to start using my platform, you know, and actually try to get involved in things that I'm interested in.
Uh-huh.
But when I mentioned that to him, they kind of looked around the room and they was like, I think I know somebody. And then a couple weeks later, I got an email from the vice president of WWE.
That's crazy,
right? And so I asked them, they asked me, you know, what did I want to be involved with, and that was kind of like, wow. Like me just literally just saying like, right, this is what I'm interested in, like really got me like just, and obviously like my platform helped, but obviously like I had to say something too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they reached out to me and they asked me if I wanted to get involved in the creative writing department. They asked me if I wanted to try the recruiting department.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing to do both. This is right before I left Miami, but they allowed me to shadow the recruiting team for the WWE, and I got to do that several times.
That's super dope. So is there any plans in the future, or are you still just kind of courting with the whole idea?
You know, at first, I was completely out of it. Like, it was like, no way. I went there and I saw the work that these athletes, what they put them through.
Right.
And it was more so from a personality standpoint. Uh-huh. I just didn't think that. I was just like, man, like, they are really putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
And be, but honestly, with the whole, you know, just like pandemic going on, and it just really just kind of like made me realize, like, I think I want to give it a shot.
That's what's up,
like,
man.
You know, it's time you got to like really just, you know, put your, you know, like do what you want to do with your
life.
Get
out there and do it, man.
Right? Yeah. Why not?
Just do it. Like, we get one life, you know, so why not? Yeah. I'll be rooting for you, even though I haven't watched it in a while. I'll definitely be rooting for you. It made me want to ask you, that was a question I had. Did you have a favorite wrestler growing up? Like, who did you watch?
My favorite? I had several. I was one of those kids where like everybody was my favorite.
Yeah.
The Rock's personality was just always stood out. I thought Stone Cold, he also was just like someone, and just the characters. I fell in love with, The Undertaker, and these were just some people that I really just like, I couldn't wait to watch them every Monday.
That's super dope, man. Mm-hmm. I wish you the best on that journey. Just transitioning, going back to San Fran, right? Retired, going through this period of like, where am I? Who am I? What am I doing?
Right.
And then I think you started to get to it. You got a call to go play in the playoffs.
Right.
This is the 2019-2020 playoffs, just passed.
Yeah.
So take us along that journey with you.
It was emotional. I went back, and I remember putting on that helmet, and I thought that I was having an out of body experience my entire career. It was multiplied
next level.
Like, I could not believe that I was putting on a helmet again.
Right.
And it was very emotional. And I'll be honest, like those three games, like, I was crying on the sideline.
I bet.
Like, getting in my stance, everything was slow motion again.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I got 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I got 3 weeks. And it's it, you know? And I just couldn't believe that I got that call back. And it was just because when John Lynch initially called me, he called me to come back. I sat there on the phone and I was quiet.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't believe like he was saying it, you know, and he was like, Earl, like, I just want to see like how you feel about coming back, joining the team. And I just sat there on the phone.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, you know, and honestly, I wasn't sure. I think that was it was like I haven't worked out.
Right. That's why I was going to ask you, were you training during that off
like
time?
Not a lot. Like, I got a gym membership and I just was feeling real unprepared.
Like a regular civilian. Like,
yeah. Like, I was just like on the elliptical.
Right.
Stretching. Yeah. And I was over the game. Like, I was starting to finally get to that step of acceptance of I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I got the phone call from John. And then at the time, I honestly wasn't sure.
Yeah.
What happened was I got another phone call from the Seahawks like the next day.
Yeah.
And I didn't read about that. And I was like, God doesn't want me to be done playing football.
Hold up. Wait a minute. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what he said.
That's what it felt like. I was like, man, he's just not done yet. Mm. Because like at first like I'm finishing my ninth season and my body was it was hard and I honestly said like I just want to play one snap of a 10th year so I can at least feel like I'm being honest when I tell people I played ten years. I was like, I just need one play, and God was like, I'll do you one better. Like, I'm gonna let you sit out the season and I'll let you play in the playoffs, get to the Super Bowl.
I think that's amazing that you were able to go through all that and get the call back to come back and play at one of the biggest games, going on an amazing playoff run, first of all. And you were superb in the Super Bowl. I think we talked about this, how you actually were able to get a sack on Mahomes, who's now like you say, a billion-dollar guy.
Right.
What was the Super Bowl experience like for you? And, you know, what's going on in your head? Like, that's just the biggest stage of NFL football.
Yeah, it was a great time. It was, you know, just overall emotional day. The fact that I got to bring my family out there was just, nice. You know, because you got to think, like, the Super Bowl's in Miami. my family got a chance to come out and you know, watch me play in Miami Stadium again.
Yeah.
And so
it's nostalgic because you played in Miami, but you're doing the Super Bowl there, and your family from Houston. Wow.
Everything, man. Like, so I'm telling you,
it's accumulation of your whole career.
Everything about my career just comes back to it being just full circle.
That's beautiful.
So, yeah, like just a really emotional day, but it's a very exciting time for me and my family.
And we talked about you talked about your story, your storyline as an NFL player or as a professional football player. What's that storyline to you?
My story will just be just, you know, just really just truly just, you know, be thankful. I stay humble. But as far as like my actual just NFL story was just be the fact that I was able to come back and play in the Super Bowl. I think that's what everybody would always be able to say. Like, they can say like I played 10 years, but like Earl was actually able to play in the Super Bowl, I think would just be a big part of it.
Right.
So I think that
many players get to do.
Yeah, so I was just I'm thankful. Like, a lot of big time players, big time names, like, they didn't get the opportunity to play in that game, but I did, and I'm thankful for that.
Right. And then we were talking earlier, you said there was a time after you got the sack, you ran to the sideline and you saw Jay-Z and Beyonce like applauding. Yeah,
that was so cool, man. Like, I'm one, I didn't think I'd be able to play in this game, but to get a sack and on this guy that just made $500 million. And yeah, I'm running to the sideline. I see Jay-Z and Beyonce in the stands and Cardi B. And I was just like, just overwhelmed with I can't believe that I'm on the stage.
Man, that's so cool to hear. Like, how far gratitude, hard work, discipline took you. Mm. So first of all, let's talk about at post career now, you're doing a lot of community work, or you're focusing your efforts more towards community and legacy.
Right.
What are some of the things you hope to accomplish just now that you've retired and you have this time to think about your legacy?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to just be selected to the Texans ambassadors. And so...
Oh, congratulations on that.
Thank you. So, you know, just being able to be part of that group now is just makes me excited to be able to really help my community even more. So that's something I look forward to.
And so that's like a program where the Houston Texans go into the city and just kind of work on, like, with inner city youth and different like social programs and things like that.
Exactly.
Okay, got you. Mm-hmm. That's dope. All right, so now we get into it. I have something I do called the obituary question. At the end of your life, what is it that you hope your obituary says about you?
I wanted to say I was a good dude. You know, I think I wanted to, yeah, I want everybody to be able to know that, you know, I was, about ending a generational curse. And, you know, this man ended a generational curse. And that's what I would love for every one of my descendants to try to just continue to carry on.
Mm-hmm. When you say, if you feel comfortable, when you say the generational curse, what was the curse that you feel that you broke through?
You know, I just think, you know, in our community, especially with, you know, especially men of color, like we get a bad rep, and it seems like a continuation of, you know, what we have been, I guess, forced to live with for generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, for me to get the opportunity to do something for my community, do something for my family, and really just start somewhere and to put a stop to what seems like a familiar course of just negative energy.
Right, right.
It's just big for me.
Absolutely.
So yeah, just to end that generational curse of what it takes to be a black man in my family is going to be big.
That's beautiful, bro.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's time to play rapid fire.
Cool.
Let's go with success.
Success. Success is your family's good.
Black woman.
Beautiful.
Pigskin.
Love.
Africa.
Amazing.
Favorite color?
Red.
Favorite movie?
Major Payne.
I love Major Payne.
Yeah.
Favorite superhero?
Superman.
Earl Mitchell is
humble, patient, kind.
Okay. There we go. I am most afraid of
jail.
Would you rather have no taste or be colorblind?
I'd be colorblind. Yeah.
All right. Would you rather, this is random. Would you rather be the person who flips the switch during executions or be the judge who decides who's executed?
Dang. I just flipped the switch. that's tough, man. That's tough. That's terrible.
That's hard. I knew that was going to trip somebody up. So the last one was to describe yourself in 3 words, but you did that already. Humble, patient, and kind. All that I can agree with for you. Another thing is, given all that's going on, police brutality, did we talk about, matter of fact, I think I really wanted to touch on this with you, and I'm glad we got here. Police brutality, social injustice, the plight of black people, the plight of white people, starting to understand what's going on with us. You as an NFL player, it was so big, right, when Kaepernick took a knee and all these other things. You know, what was happening with you during that time? And then also, where are you at now with all this going on?
Yeah, at the time, I believe it was around 2017 when we all decided to take the knee when I first got to San Francisco. And it was an interesting time. I really wasn't sure, honestly, what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I reached out to different family members, and I just kind of wanted to hear their piece on it as well. Absolutely. And it really did get to, I got a chance to open up a dialogue with, you know, different family members, whether they were even in the army or did a service for our country.
Right.
It was a very unique time. This was like pre-protest and it was a protest, but we definitely got a chance to just come together as a team and speak on it. But it was kind of a scary time, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Technically, you're putting your job on the line, risking it all that you worked so hard for this time. So what do you think are some of the things that the NFL, and you may or may not have an answer, but could do different now to show that they at least understand what's going on? Because they did. Roger Goodell issued, I think it was an apology, or more so he just let us know that, like, oh, we're more aware.
You know, I think it would be best if they just acknowledge guys like Colin Kaepernick and his efforts. Mm-hmm. I think that's really what a lot of people are looking for, and it's unfortunate that. And what's crazy is, like, you feel like it's easy for me to say this now. Like, now I'm like not playing, but as a player, like you a lot of things you feel like you're afraid to say.
Uh-huh.
But to even acknowledge Colin Kaepernick and what he was trying to establish years ago. It would be, I think, the first step.
Mm-hmm.
But I could sit and say I appreciate what they're trying to do, you know, because we do need to take progressive steps. And that's what I was concerned about when we initially took the knee. It's like, what is the next thing?
Right. What's the next thing?
So, yeah, like we can protest. We can do all this, all day. But I would love to know what our next progressive steps towards helping social injustice.
Earl, man, any last minute or parting advice that you have, just want to give to people or want people to know, from your heart to theirs?
I think everything that we should do should be based on love. I've always prided myself on just being able to just treat people with kindness. And I don't really know why. Things have gotten in such a rage, but like, I really think like we need to like really come back to what really matters and, just love at the end of the day.
Man, that's real. Well, man, I have to say thank you once again, bro. Man, congratulations on a beautiful career. I want to thank you guys for listening. This has been episode 8 of the Transformation Chamber. See you soon. Peace. Thanks again for tuning in to the Transformation Chamber. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. To find out more about Earl Mitchell, follow him at EarlMitchell90. To find out more about the Transformation Chamber, follow me at Joshua T. Dada, or visit my website at joshuatdada.com.